Anyhow, I think we're joined by Steve Sahuni. Are you there, Steve?
Yes, I am. How are you doing, Phil?
Stephen, thank you very much for joining us. It's been a long time, and our listeners have missed hearing from you, and it's my fault because I never mastered Skype. But anyhow, we have you. Stephen, we want to, first of all, you have written an article most recently that I saw, and I thought was very important because it's a very sober, factual piece about the work of the Russian peacekeepers in Syria. And as I read it, it looked to me like things are unfolding as one might hope. I mean, that seemed to be a very positive. You know, many people are talking about Turkey is up to some dirty trick, or there's going to be a problem here. But as I read your article, things seem to be being managed. Is that true?
And somehow, yes, it is. The situation in Syria is being managed, and between a deal between the Russians and the Turkish. The Turkish have now they're going to open a corridor where the terrorists, who is supported by the Turkish, are going to pull back. Then the Kurdish are going to pull back. Then they'll be between the two sides, the Russian military police and also the Syrian army will go on that highway, and it's called the M4 highway. It's an international highway in the Middle East, and it's very strategic highway. So in that area in northeast Syria, as I said, the terrorists who are supported by the Turkish are going to pull back. This is a new agreement they're talking about. They're going to pull back to the border cities. On the other side, the Kurdish militias are going to pull back, and the middle is going to be the Russians and the Syrian army. And also on the Turkish-Russian border is going to be the Russian military police and the Turkish army. Mm-hmm. But if the Turkish betrays and does not go through with the deal with the Russians, that's a different story. We all, through the last 9 years, the Turkish have not fulfilled of their truths, of their promises, of the deals. They always backstab. So this might happen, but I don't think so, because today the Turkish, they need the Russians on their side, because today the American-Turkish relationship is on the worst level. So Turkey needs the support of Russia, because now they're lost the Americans over the S-400, as we all know, the missiles. So the situation is getting a little bit better than before, but the American troops are still invading the east of Syria and stealing oil of the Syrian oil, but it's not over the oil. The United States doesn't need about $40 million worth of oil, but they're doing it for another reason, and that is to put a pressure on the Russians and the Syrian government to participate, for the Americans to participate in the rebuilding of Syria and the contracts of the rebuilding of Syria and the contracts of getting out the oil and gas in the sea and other places in Syria. So the Americans, they're stealing the oil and they never pulled out from all of Syria, just to put pressure on the Syrian government and the Russians, so they have so as they say in plain English, to have their piece of the pie. But
Stay in the game, right?
Yes, to stay in the game, because they lost the war in Syria. The Americans lost the war in Syria. Today, the Syrian army, over 80%, they are in control of over 80%. The life is coming back in the Syrian cities. The Syrian people are coming back. The Syrian people are still having problems because of the sanctions on Syria, and we cannot import because of the American sanctions. But we are the Syrian government and the Syrian people are rebuilding and trying to come back to their life slowly. Mm-hmm. As I said, but the Russian foreign policy and the way the Syrian foreign policy since 1970 all the way to today doesn't go under pressure. So this paper that President Trump is going is playing, it's not going to work, because as I said, the Russians or the Syrians, they do not go by pressure.
Yeah.
But there will be a deal to finish this all of this war in Syria, but it will not happen until after the 2020 election of the United States, either Trump stays or he is out. So whoever in charge of the White House, the Russians, they will sit with them and do a deal for the whole region, not only Syria, Lebanon, Iraq, Iran, and Yemen.
We're speaking to Stephen Sahuni. He's a Syrian-American journalist. As a matter of fact, Stephen, I think you once lived in Fresno, which means that you know America better than most Americans do if you lived in Fresno.
Yes,
it's a very special story. Someday we'll talk about that wonderful city. Stephen, there are other players here, right? I get the impression that, you know, they did not managed to create a regime change. They broke their teeth trying. Now they are the terrorists are in a very bad spot from their point of view. And the new arrangements between the greater powers, who are all one way or another involved, some with principle and some with absolutely no principle, but they're having to adjust. I just wonder, isn't some of this also the presence of the U.S. in the oil area have something to do also with Iraq?
It's all connected. We've seen the Americans' invasion to Iraq was all over the oil in 2003 under so-called the weapon of mass destruction. Today, the war in Syria, as we saw, all of the regional powers are backing down. Now who's in charge and who's in the battlefield in Syria is only the Russians, the Turkish, and the Americans and the Syrians. The mm-hmm. others are not showing up, like the Gulf countries, the Iranians. They're not that how they were in the beginning of the war. And mm-hmm. they're not appearing as they were in, let's say, 2017, 18. Today, all of the problem is only in the northeast Syria where the Kurds are, and this is all because of the fault of the Kurdish militia. They stood with the American invaders. I say invaders because they're illegally under international law, they're illegal in Syria.
Totally.
So they are invaders.
Yes.
So all of the problem happening in northeast Syria is because of the Kurds, and in the east of Syria is all because of the Kurds. And as we know, the Kurdish, they stood and supported and stood by the Americans, and everyone knows the Americans, they do not stand loyal with their allies. And this has been through history. In 2011, so-called Arab Spring, they dropped their own allies. Yes. Mubarak of Egypt, Gaddafi of Libya, Bin Ali of Yemen, Abdullah Saleh of Yemen and Tunisia. All of those allies of the US, they dropped them when they finished from them. The same thing they did today with the Kurdish.
Yes.
And the government and the Syrian people and everyone told, even the Russians, they all told the Kurdish, do not put your bet on the Americans. The Americans will leave you. They did not. And all of these problems happening in the northeast Syria, it's because of the Kurdish militias, not all of the Kurdish people, just the militia and some of the Kurdish people.
That I wanted to ask about, because, of course, when they realized that the Americans were going to leave, some of the leadership, and I'd like you to break that down for us, began to talk in a very reasonable way with the Damascus government and to open the areas that they were, some of the areas, cities they had occupied or claimed as Kurdish. Now they are, the Syrian government has returned, right? How do relations stand? Because the U.S. seems to still be flirting a bit with the Kurds. Trying to keep the idea alive that they might do something for them, but just in terms of the political arrangement, the Syrian government and the Kurdish leadership now have at least a rough understanding with each other. Is that right?
Yes, and the Kurdish are in a point of view, a weakness point on the weak part. The Damascus government, they are on the strong part, because at the second that the Americans backstabbed the Kurdish, the Kurdish went to the Russians and asked for their help to be in the middle between this, to find a deal between the Syrian government and the Kurdish. But the Americans are trying to, as I said, they're using the Kurds as a pressure on the Syrian government and the Russians. But now I think, and the majority of the Kurdish people and the Kurdish, they're Syrian citizens, but the Kurdish officials and the parties in Northeast Syria, they woke up and they saw that you cannot rely on the Americans. And Trump said, we are not going to fight the war between Syria and Turkey and defend the Kurds. They've been fighting for decades. So they know the Kurdish, if they stab the Damascus in the back, the Damascus might just pull out, like use that paper against the Kurdish. Like, if you do not be loyal with us, we'll let the Turkish come and kill you.
Yes. Background, further to that, it does help, you know, here, of course, all issues involving Russia are treated in a kind of a paranoid and phobic way. But in fact, it has helped that Russia has what they used to call good offices with people like the Kurds. They have always maintained a relationship, a talking relationship to the Kurdish leaders, both in Iraq, Syria, and Turkey, I suppose. And that has, frankly, has helped. Because I don't recall they have having a reputation for double-crossing the Kurds. I think that's a Western tradition.
Yes, the backstabbing that's specialized by the American State Department and the White House. They are specialized.
And the British had a bit of that. When they had an opportunity to double-cross them, they did it. We're speaking to Stephen Sahuni. You mentioned the highway, and that's a sensitive issue I've read about, that the Turkish leadership in the past, but certainly the terrorists, wanted to prevent that highway from functioning. Will it now be at some point under Syrian sovereign authority in months going forward?
Now it started. The Russians and the Syrian army are doing patrols on that highway.
Will civilians be able to, you know, do trade, go travel that highway now with the Russians and Turks there? What will it be a functioning highway?
It will be a functioning highway, but we need to, because this deal is still new. Right now, it's not the Turkish, it's the Syrian army and the Russian military police. They're the ones who are doing the patrols on that highway.
By the way, fact is played down here. People here, the media, are very unhappy to discover that there's going to be Syrian sovereignty, because the agreement they've reached says the territory of Syria will be intact and the sovereignty of Syria will be respected. And even Turkey has agreed to that, have they not?
Yes, everyone has agreed on it. The Turkish, they did not agree on it just because they like it, as I said, because the Russians, they forced them. Yes. And they were forced to do it, and they have no other say. The Syrian sovereignty in the oil wells. Also today, the Syrian army took over the second biggest electric plant in the east of Syria. Today they took it over, and they already took the biggest one also a few weeks ago. So the Syrian army is spreading with the Russians on all of the strategic area, like the oil wells in northeast Syria. Also, the electric plants, the sensitive areas, they are spreading all over the Russians and the Syrians. And the Turkish, they are in one area, one small area, like one line on the north of Syria. But that's with an agreement with the Russians.
Yeah. Well, the beauty of this, if there is some, is that it is an actual agreement where the parties understand each other, instead of it just being, you know, unwillingness to come to the table and unwillingness to have an agenda and have it clarified. This is a clear agreement where the parties have expectations that the other party is going to live up to the agreement.
Yes, that is true. The biggest reason that this all of this agreement happened and this the Syrian government have succeeded to spread in all over Syria and took so much land, it's just because of the Syrian army fought very hard and took over land, but also the Russian political support and the Russian political help, more than the Russian military support, the Russian political support. There was a lot of cities, a lot of towns that they just give their weapons and they let the Syrian army to come in because of the negotiation that the Russians had between one side and the Syrian government, just like in suburbs of Damascus, in the south of Syria, and now they did it with the Kurds. So that the Russians, the Russian policy had helped big time and also saved a lot of blood besides all of the war and the attack between the Syrian government and the terrorists from the other side. So the Russians had a big role in this. If it was the Americans, they could have wanted this war to go through for another 10, 15 years.
Yeah. Now, there's also an issue going to be with it we should mention here. Canada broke relations. Canada closed the embassy of the Syrians. They closed their own embassy in Syria because they anticipated the overthrow of the government and something like Libya. They had hoped, they had prayed, they had diligently worked to try to make that happen. But the sanctions are, and they put sanctions in place. How difficult is life going to be with when we think of wintertime, they always say, oh, now the Syrians are going to be, it's going to be cold, they won't have fuel, they won't have food. Tell us about how what that situation is.
The situation is really bad on the economy. The sanctions that's being put by the Western countries, it's not, no one is being hurt except the Syrian people.
Well, that's what they want. I have no doubt that they want to hurt the Syrian people.
Yeah, it's not hurting anyone else. The rich people, they can get on a plane and leave Syria immediately. The rich people in Syria, but the who's being targeted is the poor people. And yes. But if the Syrian government and the Syrian army take back the fuel, the oil wells and the gas wells, and they're already making enough gas, that's enough for Syria. The Syrian army and the Syrian government already found and pumping out gas, that's enough for Syria. Where the problem is the oil and the gas fuel and other kinds of fuel, and that's where the problem is. And we are only, before the crisis, Syria used to make 400,000 barrels a day. Today, they're making only about 35 to 40,000 barrels a day.
And that's so why we had that uproar over the Iranian tanker trying to bring fuel to the Syrian people.
That's so true. Yeah. And the Syrian, that's, and now the Syrian army have spread it in a lot of oil wells in this northeast of Syria, and they should, as soon as possible, the Russians and the Syrians should start working on that. Working on that, and that area in the northeast Syria is not only important because it has the gas and oil, but it's also important because that's the, as they say, the lung of Syria on agriculture. Also, in Syria before the war, that area used to grow all of the wheat of Syria, and the crops of Syria used to come from that area. So also that area agriculturally is strategic and important, also on the oil. So when we get that area in our hand, in the Syria in Syria's hand, it will be easier on the Syrian people. Like even before the crisis, Syria did not hardly import anything. They used to grow, they eat from what they grow, and they have their own oil, they have the factories, they used to have everything. They did not import anything. Now, Syria is needing to import everything, and at the same time, we cannot import anything because of the sanctions put by America and the West countries.
Yes, Canada and the European Union, France, Britain.
That's so true.
We're speaking to Stephen Sahuni, and I'd urge you to just Google Stephen Sahuni. He's written many good articles, very reliable articles, and you can find them on the internet. And Stephen, we talked about how there's the ripple effect of some of the struggle. And I mentioned Iraq and other. How about what is going on in Lebanon? Is this, are there any connections to this, to the growing power, the return to power of the sovereign government of Syria? Is there Lebanon? Is this a separate phenomenon, or is there some connection?
First of all, there's something about Syria and Lebanon. Syria and Lebanon, they're connected through history. And if Syria is stable, Lebanon is stable. And if, at the same time, if Lebanon is stable, Syria is stable. So when Syria gets stable, when Syria getting stable, it's going to reflect positively on the Lebanon. But the problem is there's a big part of Lebanon. They are employees for the American embassy, and they are employees for the American State Department and the White House. So they do not allow the Syrian refugees in Lebanon to go to be sent back to Syria. And even though that the Lebanese president, Michel Aoun, wants to, and he's been saying it on several speeches, even on his speech in the Security Council 2 months ago, he asked and he wants to send the Syrian refugees back to home, back to their cities and homes, because it's all liberated and it's all fixed. Mm-hmm. Fixed, like there's no terrorists, no bombing, no nothing. Mm-hmm. So, but the big part of the Lebanese officials, they are not allowing it. And as I said, they are working with the Americans. So this is the problem.
They're treating them like hostages. They're treating them like hostages.
Yes, hostages. And at the same time, they are using them to make money, to take money from the United Nations, the Security Council, and their organization, organizations, NGOs, that they take money. Besides giving, let's say, the refugee family $100, they give them $25, and they put in their pocket $75. That's how they're doing.
Yeah. So there's money to be made off refugees, and they're doing it. And of course, they are notorious for corruption. That seems to be the magic word at the moment. But yeah. I'm really glad you clarified that. Now, there's, I guess, a related matter, and we inevitably have to talk about it. The White Helmets, so-called, I hate that term, but anyhow, the people who worked together side by side with the terrorists in the areas they had occupied, performing duties of allegedly looking through rubble for anyone injured, which seems like a Hollywood construct. Anyhow, they've been pretty much exposed over the years as really being a one-trick pony. They're associated only with the terrorists, and now the terrorist area is being slowly closed in upon, and many people are seeing them as allies, of course, as the terrorists, and they've lost their most famous leader, this man Messier. In Turkey, what's your idea about what happened there?
What happened there is their papers burnt. Everyone knows who the White Helmets really are. That guy, he knows too much information, and his role is finished. So they, as they say, they snuffed him. They killed him, as they say. It's just the same thing as they did with Baghdadi, with all of the American agents that they use in their wars. The same thing as what they did with Bin Laden. When you have too much information, they just they take them out of the picture. Yeah. And that's what they did, because the whole story does not go through. If you think, sit and think about the whole story, it does not hold any water, as they say in plain English.
I gotta think about that. What's in the water? The dog?
No. It doesn't hold the story.
Oh, it doesn't hold water. Yeah, it doesn't hold water. Yes. Yeah. it was speaking to Stephen Sahuni. Actually, Stephen, I held out the chance that he might have been a suicide in that he has a lot to be depressed about. At one time, he and Hollywood and the U.S. State Department were on a roll. They may have been passing around the demerit points for who messed up. It crossed my mind that he might have just retired himself, but I think it's as likely as not your description. That takes us back to Idlib. Now, that Idlib has got to be like a sore point. It's a pimple within Syria. What can we expect to happen there?
Yeah, what's going to happen is the Syrian army and Russia is going to keep continue until the terrorists there. They have two choices. Either they're going to be eliminated or they're going to put their weapons down. There's one problem there is that there's Syrian terrorists who have Syrian identity and they're from that area. And then you have the Uyghurs who come from China. And the Turkish, they don't want them. And of course, the Chinese, they're not going to accept them back. So the only way is to eliminate all of the terrorists in that area. And that's what's going to happen. And that's what the Russian-Turkish meeting between President Erdogan and President Putin, when they had their meeting, is to finish terrorism and fight terrorism. On every meeting they do, is they put number one is to fighting terrorism, even, and that's what the Syrian government wants.
Everybody, by the way, you really put your finger on this. People have agreed, and you know, this idea was introduced, well, the whole world is going to fight terrorism. Syria agreed with that. Libya agreed with the fight against it. Russia agreed. But then the U.S. said, no, no, we only fight the ones that we don't like, and the others can reign free and can operate in your territory. But the game, that game seems to be up. Could you tell us what percentage of the fighters, the armed men who keep, who say they're going to fight to the death in Idlib, what percentage of them are foreigners, not Syrian?
The majority of them, over 70%. But at the same time, we have to remember that the Syrian terrorists, they were shipped from all over Syria into that city. And that's the card that the Russians and the Syrians play together, is to empty all of the city, all of the cities from terrorists and putting them in one city. And that way it will be easier for them to eliminate when it's the last battle. And the last battle is Idlib.
Yeah. Well, by the way, they entered the country via Turkey for the most part, right? Most, almost all of those folks, particularly the Uyghur, came through Turkey. And the now every time there's been a strategic effort by the Syrian army, people forget this. It has ended in a very humane way. All those confrontations, like particularly I'm remembering Aleppo, eventually it turned out they didn't want to fight to the death, and they were happy to get on the green buses and go somewhere else. I raised Turkey because, will the green buses take them to Turkey this time?
No, because the Turkish, there's something also, because today Erdogan, he does not have the same power that he had in 2011, 12, 13, 14. Today, Erdogan's power inside of his country is unstable. We saw he lost his election in Istanbul.
Yes, can I stop you there? I did see that, and I read, I want to know if you could confirm it, that the mayor, the new mayor of Istanbul, said he wanted to recognize the Syrian government and to be friends with Syria. Is that right?
Yes, and there's something, even the same president Bashar al-Assad said, we do not have problem, and we are not all of the Turkish people are on enemies. Our enemy is Erdogan and his party. Mm-hmm. Who is actually MB, Muslim Brotherhood. But mm-hmm. we have historical relationship with Syria. And he just said that on an interview a few days ago. So Syria does not, and there's a lot of Turkish political parties came to Damascus and met in Damascus with the Syrian officials. So Syria has no problem with the Turkish people or with the Turkish officials, the other parties. Their problem is with the Muslim Brotherhood through history, because they are murderers and Erdogan is the head of them. So. Mm-hmm. And today, he is losing. He is losing inside of Turkey. He is not in the same power. So it's not up to him, and he cannot accept him back. What they might do, either they might be eliminate them inside of Idlib, or mm-hmm. another way, what they might do is to ship him to another country where they're going to do, the Americans will do another chaos in another country or let up another war. So they will ship him up to another country so they can use the same people, but in this other country.
Yeah. By the way, if we study empires, that is what they do. They take in their operatives, and 20 years later, they turn them loose on somebody, or they have we have this magic word blowback. They end up getting harmed by the little character that they brought back into their country.
That's true. And all of these fanatics, political Islam parties, political, they're using the religion as a political weapon. And these terrorist groups all starts from the 1950s, when the Americans and the Saudis made Al-Qaeda and made the Taliban to fight the Soviet Union. They are funded and made by the CIA and the American State Department since the 50s of the past century. And they kept using them until now. They're using them every while. They take that terrorist group and they put under a new name, under a new leader. In the past, it was Al-Qaeda with bin Laden. Today, then it was ISIS, Baghdadi. Next few years, they will have someone else under a new name. Mm-hmm. And that's all by the Americans and through history. Where all of these terrorist groups who are fight under the names God or what they all of the massacres they do, it's all funded by the United States, because we you saw all of their high quality videos and the way they shoot their videos and the way of the planned stuff, and at the same time we saw in August of 2015, August 2015, when the Russian interfered, the Russians saw from satellite all of the oil being stolen from the east of Syria to Turkey. The Americans did not see that. The Russians saw it and bombed them. And that had a big role of the defeat of ISIS.
That was so striking. If you were going to say there's a watershed moment, it was seeing those Russian flights knocking out the terrorist oil business, which led the trucks lined up in a convoy carrying oil into Turkey, and they knocked them out.
Yes, and that oil who was buying it, it was Erdogan's son, Bilal Erdogan. He was buying it from them and selling it to Europe.
Well, at least one member of the family got something out of this.
Yeah, and under the protection of the United States.
Yes.
So the United States have been stealing the oil since ISIS.
And that was Obama and Biden. That was Obama and Biden, too, and the Clintons.
That's so true.
Yeah. We've been speaking to Stephen Sahuni. Stephen, it's great talking to you. Your articles are wonderful. We look forward to talking to you again soon, because you're adding new and what we consider happy chapters to this book. So we're glad to be talking to you. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you very much, Phil.
All right. Stephen Sahuni. Thank you.